like something coming out of the way, crunch. Nothing's just a sideways collision. So got out. He was coming from gravel, so he didn't want any fuss.
It was the same position.
He didn't want any fuss, so but we found when we got back in my car, the front wheel was flat. So pulled in tendomic, pulled down there, and Neil was changing the wheel. A police car came from somewhere. Breathalyzed me. Neil was keeping a low profile, which is the driver. Breathalyzed me. I passed. And he said, well, I better talk to Mr. Jones. And got in the police car and talked. I said, well, I passed. We'd wait a few minutes. And he wasn't meant to do this. He breathalyzed me again, which is illegal, apparently, once you pass it once. Yeah. And I passed it the second time. Well, Mr. Jones, I must warn you, you're very near. You've drunk a lot. I can tell you've drunk a lot, but you've had a lot to eat as well.
Thanks, Eric.
And I went back to the car. No sign of Neil Tuffin. I looked all around, no. Got in the car, drove home. Down between the railway bridge and the bridge, I caught up with Tuffin. He was absolutely certain I was on the way to the clink.
He was walking.
He was walking.
So he took the option of walking
home. He was walking home because he was drunk.
Now, you, John and Roger were huge eaters, scratchers, as we used to call them.
Well, we worked hard. John, like you lot who just idled around, school teachers.
But Glenn Tanner always used to say, you Jones boys should have a table on your own in the corner, away from everybody else. Because the teas were so magnificent, weren't they?
He was a big eat.
The teas were fantastic.
Montgomery teas were, yeah. We went to one or two other places.
Some of the teas we had.
Some teas were terrible, weren't they?
One at Aberystwyth once, we went to, there were some curled up sandwiches.
A plate. They put the sandwiches on there and two cakes, and you think, well, where's the rest of it?
Curled up.
They're all curled up at the ends of it.
The worst was when we went to Aberystwyth to play a few times.
Yeah, we played the Aberystwyth.
What
the university
staff.
Or, university staff, weren't they?
It was in Frank Keyes. He got a game up, didn't he? And the tees there were shocking. Oh,
played on the college ground, didn't we?
That's right.
Good wicket.
The only other place with tees as good as Montgomery, I think, was Welshpool.
Yeah,
they did have magnificent tees there. The Newtown
They still are.
And there was another occasion when I believe, this might be apocryphal, but the story was that the three Jones boys, there was no car on the road, all three had pranged their cars in the same week.
Where did you get that from? In the narrow lanes around Garthland on Berry Road. Totally untrue. We never had a car each, anyway.
I think it came from Roger.
So. Talking about transport, I remember taking a steamroller from your place down the road, across the canal and up by Argie Hall, back up to the cricket ground.
Driving it on the road?
Aye.
You drove it?
Yeah.
Oh, well done.
You told me which way to go.
Mm. Oh, I don't remember that.
Did you have a steam roller?
Not a big one.
A diesel roller?
A diesel roller, a yellow one. I remember that.
You used to walk behind or sit on?
You sit on, but it was small.
This was after the...
We were taking it to the cricket ground.
This was after the stone one then?
We had a roller. Where did it come from? Henry Black's? No.
Because I got it from your house.
From Garth's house, you mean?
Yeah.
From home, not where. Yeah. Don't remember that.
No, I can't remember.
Because you told me which way to go, you see, to avoid all the traffic. Mm. And I drove it all the way back up to Montgomery to the cricket club.
Well, that would be at the start of the season, probably, Chris, would it?
I can't quite remember. Mm. It was dry. It wasn't raining.
Have we stored it in the winter?
Possibly.
I can't remember that.
Could be me young at summer, time on my hands. It would take you a few hours to get there.
Yeah. You used to do a lot of work on the ground, didn't you?
But yeah, it was good. It was enjoyable.
The one factor that's gone right through one of them is Harry, isn't it?
Oh, yes.
He's been late before us
and he's still involved.
Yeah, well, that's right.
And at one time there was very few doing anything with the club, was there? It went to a bad time in the 60s sometime.
He did the wicket for years.
Yes.
He was very, very protective of the wicket.
Yes.
And I remember one match particularly.
It was.
It rained all morning. We were playing Lillishaw. I was umpiring. And went down there, and the message was, Harry says, we're not to play. But then Lillishaw were there, so we played. We've been playing about 3/4 an hour, and he appeared, shaking his fist, and demonstrating and calling me Well, good job he can. Calling me every name under the sun for letting this game to go on. But it was going on, he went. Now, Lillish had a batsman called Alan Bywater. And on that podgy of a pitch, he made 123 that day. And they scored about 108, 100. Did they score over 200?
No, they scored well over 200.
Well, 200. Well, anyway, when Montgomery went into bat, somebody hadn't come. John wasn't playing regularly, but you were in the team. You came in number 9, I think. Montgomery were about 60 for 7. Colin Davis, excuse me, Colin Davis was about 20 not out when John came in. And Colin Davis and John won that game. Colin Davis scored 164.
Oh,
and John scored 30, something like that.
134,
was it?
156 minutes.
Yes.
Was the top score.
Is that the highest score ever made for the corner?
While he scored this 100, we put on over 100 for this 7th or 8th
wicket. Well, there's a lot more than that.
And I scored 19.
In what space of time? Was this by 7:30, or was
it an overs game? An overs game.
About 20 overs.
It was in. He was probably going at 6 and over, 7 and over. He thrashed them all around the ground.
Is that the highest score ever made?
It was at the time.
150.
156, I think it was.
Yeah, I got it wrong. I thought 164, but it could easily be 156.
Well, he was a good batsman. He wouldn't have scored that many in the 50s.
And the following year, Stans, his brother, scored 154 down at Shelton. And could easily have passed his score, and he didn't. He was out just short of what Collins scored the year before.
Right. The run's worth a lot less now. I'm not decrying there.
Yeah, Shelton was a very fast ground.
Oh, Shelton was always a good wicket.
Really short grass.
Well, he's got plenty of labour.
Yeah.
There was a little... That tail hadn't finished the little game, because Harry had gone off in a sweat. He smoke came out of his ears. He was stumping. And he didn't come back down again. We came up that night. What sort of bloody mercy were you? I told you you shouldn't play. I suppose you lost. Well, no, Harry, we won. Well, not many runs scored, I don't suppose.
And 200 centuries.
400 runs then. Over 400 runs.
Do you remember any other famous victories that you played in? Sticking your collective memories.
Those are the sort when you come from behind and you don't expect.
Newtown, I can remember.
Oh, yes.
Going back a long time when the wicket was rough, we were out for 50 something and got them out for 30. Glyn Tanner took a lot of wickets, going back a long way, early 60s maybe. That's one I can remember.
When we got promoted to the same league as Newtown and Welshpool, and Llanidlas and Welsh School, there was no real problem. They accepted us as their equals. Newtown never did.
No.
And we couldn't. It got to our players. They went on the field with not an inferior combos, but they were trying too hard.
Yeah.
And the first time we beat them, I don't know how many they scored, but we were 30 runs behind with 9 wickets down. And Jonathan Williams and Joe Davis batted, didn't they? They won the game. And neither of them could, but, well, Jonathan is quite a sensible bat now, but he couldn't bat for toffee then, could he?
No.
And Joe could keep his head up, but he couldn't score, but they got most of them in singles, didn't they?
Can I ask, just sort of coming back to the process of the games, scoring, scoreboards, things like that. What was this, for example, scoreboard?
It used to be metal. They made of metal and they'd have numbers on the front. They were black metal with white numbers, front and back. And we used to have a little post in the corner and one of us would be charged, usually one of the kids, go up there and put that up there. And
where the old pavilion, the very old pavilion, there was a gate.
And across the road, open the 5-bar gate, and on the left there was a rickety old bench, wasn't it? And then right in the corner, as the fences met, there was a post.
A wooden scoreboard.
We used to put the numbers on there.
The best thing was the ducks were put up. Picture of a duck you made, Not a knot was put up, a duck to show everybody.
Yes, we never had a decent scoring system until the one.
There's never been a cricket board who didn't make a duck sometime or other.
We'd all take it in turns to do the scoreboard.
That's right, scoreboard,
You've got to keep your wits about you there as well.
We did have somebody did it regular after.
We've had...
Frank Evans did it for a long time. Frank Evans. Yes.
That's right. Kendrick. Ken's brother. Kendrick. That's right,
and
yeah.
then, since then, we've had two outstanding scorers. David Gent, who was training for the church and was as great. And the book had to be meticulous. He was his father's headmaster of
Newtown School.
David's a vicar somewhere now.
Yeah.
But you had to be right. He would be very upset if I gave him a wrong signal as an umpire. And he was quite capable of running.
If he had to change the figure on the book.
Yes, if he had to change the figure on the book. And after that, we had a chap came called Paul Beasley. Now, Paul had kept scorebooks in first-class cricket. And he was absolutely superb, wasn't he, John?
Yes, he was. He used a different colour for every batsman and every bowler. Right.
Robin Olsen could do that. He taught you how to do it.
Did he?
Yes. Robin Olsen was absolutely fantastic.
So neat and tidy. Well,
go back to scorebooks, too. Mm. Now,
go on.
Go on. This is... I talked about Rob Kinsey and Brian. They had two things in common. Apart from the skills and they kept their score in their heads. Oh. And they would dispute this one, especially with
Brian,
the score. General, with the scorer.
General Brian.
Kinsey wasn't bad.
He's not denying it either.
But this one, they'd be, why isn't Brian come for tea? He's going through the scorebook, and he would say, I hit a four there, the next shot was a single.
Or he could actually tell you where he put the ball.
Yeah, and that next one was single. And the poor old scorer would say, well, no, the umpire signaled a leg by. Well, no, I hit it.
What's your impression of, the contrast between when you were playing and how it is now? Not just the quality. I mean, how would you feel? I mean, supposing you were, would you like to play now? Would you? What's your feeling about?
It'd be easier,
the
I think.
The biggest difference is leagues. Yeah. We played all friendlies when we started.
They were
so like friendlies with inverted commas on some of them.
But
it did change when we started playing for. And we played friendlies Saturdays and Sundays. Well, now don't play Sundays hardly at all, do they?
No. I think it's changed. I watched one or two games in the last 2 years, and to me, too much shouting on the pitch, the fielders, too many captains. I watched Philip was umpiring a few years ago, and I think they were playing Lillishaw. I think Lillishaw must have had 11 captains on the field. They were appealing from fine leg and shouting at each other and jumping up in the air if they got a wicket as though they'd bowled out Bradman and whatever, or Hutton or... And it just seemed to be much noisier to me. Well, you will know better.
Rude, didn't it? It isn't a reflection of cricket particularly, it's how reflection of life.
Well, in football it's happening every year. People are more vociferous.
Yes.
And
And less willing to accept authority.
Yes. More difficult to umpire, must be. Yeah.
Oh, no. Like I'm playing a cricket match with a double compared to... Yeah. Refing a football match.
Yeah. Well, I don't know how they stand it today.
Well, I know when I left, I didn't always play for Montgomery. I played for a team in Cardiff, and we would play midweek matches, and they were hostile. That's the only word I can see.
Are you on cricket or football now?
No, we're on cricket.
Cricket.
Right, if you played midweek cricket in Cardiff two or three times a week, you'd be on something like Poncana Fields. Yeah,
I know where
Poncana is. You've got about 10 wickets and 10 games going on there, each with their own various supporters. You sometimes could end up with fights amongst supporters and even on the field. And I thought, what have I done to come here when I used to be in Montgomery? Mm-hmm. And it was far more sedate, Brian was saying. Yeah. And thank heavens, I don't play cricket now and haven't done for a number of years, but I would not want to go into today's game where I see so many people shouting 11 captains and everybody doing the high fives. Like,
isn't it reflected from the first class game, what comes down the grassroots?
Well, I would think so.
It's got to be, isn't it? Yeah.
I was watching on Sky, you know, our recent one-day games in India, and I thought the England players were a disgrace. It wasn't just a normal sledge.
No.
Just because they were losing and they'd been used to winning in recent years, they were terrible. Against India, I thought they were diabolical. The bowlers particularly. Gone too far.
What's about, you mentioned the equipment and the very primitive equipment that plays even into your era.
Yeah.
What about the difference now in, you know, even in our cricket, everybody has helmets.
Oh, it's different.
Do you agree with that?
I think has it happened the same in golf and tennis? They've improved the rackets and golf clubs and bats so much that the six is easy.
Yeah, can you remember when it first came in, the helmets in the Montgomery?
That's why I was playing.
Well, it didn't.
I never wore a helmet ever.
No, I know that, but the advent of the helmet.
In the 90s.
When did you wear them?
I can remember playing when I first came in.
The other thing.
Yeah, I didn't wear them, but I remember somebody wearing them in the 80s.
Gordon Harris wore them. He was about the first I saw wearing
in the 80s.
He was slow on his feet, though, wasn't he, Gordon?
He was very fond of his looks.
Yeah, that's right.
But, like, what has changed now, you see, you cannot play youth cricket unless they wear helmets.
No. Right. Health and safety again.
Can you?
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
No.
Well, listen, gentlemen, it's been an absolute pleasure listening to you. I mean, has anybody got anything else, any burning stories?
Andrew Black will remind me something I haven't said.
I've got the impression...
We'll come again. If you invite us, we'll come again. The barman was good, too. The barman was hellish good down there.
Chris, no one.
I think I did.
Is that camera off? No.
Is it up? One last one from me. I did mention it when you interviewed me before about the Vicar of Condover who always played, and Harold Davis was umpiring, and there was a lot of swearing going on by the Montgomery team, particularly Gerald Robinson.
Oh, this is about the same story I was going to say.
Epping and blinding, and anyway, in the end, the Vicar, it got too much of the Vicar, so he went up to Harold, who was umpiring, and said, "Oh, this is terrible, all this swearing." And Harold replied, "Yes, they are a rum lot of buggers, aren't they?" Is that the one you were...
Yeah, something like that. It was Tim Robinson, same thing, and the ball shot through and hit the Vicar somewhere in Barson. Tim turned around, I bet that bloody hurts. Something.
It's a moment to stop, really. So thank you very much indeed.
Thank you.
Thank you, George.
Thank you, George. He's an unsung hero over there, isn't he?